And here's your prescription.
I know just the pharmacy to get this filled.
Who are you?
A pharmacy benefit manager. A middleman your insurer uses to decide which medicines you can get, what you pay, and sometimes even which pharmacy you should go to.
Why can't I go to a pharmacy in my neighborhood?
Because I make more money when you go to a pharmacy I own.
No one should stand between you and your medicine. Visit phrma.org/middleman to learn more. Paid for by Pharma.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. I'm just going to lay out because you want to talk about no cultural reference here, fellas, folks. No cultural reference, please. You have the floor.
Leave the show to the minivan owners.
I went to a concert last night of a band that I like, enjoy, but I don't consider myself like a fan of in particular. I didn't know the names of any of the musicians, for instance. And I tell Godfrey I'm going, and it turns out that Godfrey like follows this band around like a groupie.
Yeah. I don't follow anyone around. I'm too old for that. But if they're in my vicinity, I go.
So were you invited here, Alex? Or what were you invited to this?
Yeah, was
this
you end up at a
girlfriend sponsored production, or
girlfriend just suggested, hey, you want to go to the National? And I was like, sure. You know, I've heard a few of their songs. I thought, you know, I thought, oh, these guys seem like kind of sad but pretty good.
Is your way cooler girlfriend a National fan, or was this just like the kind of spur of the moment shit you do in your commitmentless 20s?
I think somewhat spur of the moment. They've done a few things with Taylor Swift, so they have some crossover appeal to the more mainstream, you know, millennial audience there. And I got to tell you this, Stephen. I went expecting them to just be
proud of you. I'm so
really morose and sad the whole time.
And
these dudes are, I mean, they get after it. They give you a show.
I'm so proud.
This dude like goes swimming in the crowd, like some like 50-year-old looking dad with glasses, like goes all the way into the crowd, screaming his head off.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest working man in show business. We need a person like this for the Splits and Duo live show. Is the chord guy for the National, who follows this guy around to make sure that he doesn't like hang himself by accident or choke himself with the cord as he's twisting himself and like jumping off the stage. I was actually very concerned. It seemed like a safety hazard. And this guy just follows him around, makes sure the cord doesn't do anything dangerous.
This was your mindset during a concert does not surprise me at all. That you're standing around in the middle of a National concert being like, well, I bet OSHA would have a field day in here.
It was fun. Good for the National.
I'm so
give you a
proud
show.
That you went. So are you converted now? Can I get you like? Can I? Get
oh man,
you,
I like, am.
Album
I am. I am nationalized. I'm more nationalized than the oil company during the revolution. I think that it was
clip that
they are. Oh, they are God. Great. But Richard, I want to let you back into the show because I don't think you have any idea what we're talking about.
Nope.
Let's move from cool to decidedly less cool. College football news this week. It was a week of messing up and doing and getting caught with bad things in college football.
Speaking of OSHA,
let's start at USC. Yeah, that's Southern California, not South Carolina in this case. Mike Bone, the athletic director there, resigned on Friday afternoon, shortly after the school sent out a press release in which he talked about health and spending time with the family. The Los Angeles Times reported that numerous members of the athletic department had raised concerns about inappropriate remarks from Bone, especially towards female colleagues, which they said were brought to Mike Bone's attention. Please stop. And did not lead to those comments stopping. In fact, the press release came after the Times reached out with questions, but I believe before the Times' story came out, which, man, good effort, USC. You almost had us fooled. Yep. And no, you didn't.
The TikTok of that was like roughly, by the way, really like news dump Hall of Fame worthy stuff here from the Trojans. It was roughly 4:30 Eastern time on a Friday that they put this out, or Mike Bone put this
That's
out.
Some as good PR saying. Right there, baby.
As Alex is saying, because, you know, one enterprising reporter was on the phone at the bar with his girlfriend and friends, you know, awesome Friday evening. As Alex is saying, Bone like put a statement out to the LA Times in response to these questions. And initially, the story was just the statement, and kind of an understanding of why that happens is, you know, if you've got something, you've got it confirmed with the source on the record and you think it's going to get scooped because, you know, this is a competitive enterprise. You put it out. I don't fault the LA Times for doing what they did. It was the statement from the guy on the record. I will tell you guys, I hate it when in my phone, health concerns autocorrects from, you know, an outside legal investigation.
Why can't we just do
into my toxic workplace
environment? Why can't we just do like you don't work here no more? Why we got to do this?
USC is chicken shit for doing this at 4:30 Eastern time. USC is Mike Bone is chicken shit for telling Pete Thamel on the record that he parted amicably with USC. USC is chicken shit for parting amicably with this guy. Like, it's just on and on and on. It's just they ran the play. They ran the play,
dude,
here.
I wouldn't expect anything else. The only thing I have to add other than this, and instead of just shrugging and laughing at what this industry will permit and encourage, is that in the reporting, there was an official complaint filed by multiple individuals to the Title IX office at Cincinnati, which is Bone's former employer. There's also a quote in there that Alex, I don't have my notes in front of me, but I believe it's originally from the LA Times story, and that not one of the women, but it was a male whistleblower in the department said, like, we all couldn't believe he got this, talking about the USC job.
I've got that's the notes insane. In front of me. We all felt as a staff he'd eventually be gone. We had no idea he'd end up at USC.
Yeah, when they said gone, they meant like fire.
They did not mean a much larger, more prestigious job. That would be a fun conversation to have with Southern Cal.
Well, the tenor, remember, I will say the tenor of the USC job at the time he took it, I don't even know if took it's the right word. It's kind of like got it. Like the job was passed on by some people.
Yeah, but
like it was.
There's still plenty. Of non-letchers they could have hired.
Sure. But I'm just saying, you know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
Like they went like down the list, right, to get to some people and ended up with him. So you can like rattle off the USC school, the university scandals. I mean, there was a med school dean, like a heinous thing with the med school dean like 4 or 5 years ago.
Are they the new Louisville?
I don't know if they're the new Louisville. They're
might be the old Louisville. They might be the old Louisville, just reminding you what's up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those kind of, you know, dad strength things where you try to wrestle old pop and you realize he's still got it.
Forget that, motherfuckers.
Like it's one of those situations. I mean, that doesn't even get to Alex, the FBI or whatever stuff that was going on with the basketball team and the tutoring thing.
No,
or the SAT thing.
You are right that it goes deeper. There was the issue with the dean. It goes deeper than these couple, but just in the last like 5 years, 6 years, FBI basketball stuff, Varsity Blues, which is like, you know, making movies about it, material scandal type stuff. And these things are all very different. And now you exit your AD for...
Alex doesn't mean the movie Varsity Blues. That was the code name given to the Sting.
Point is,
you think a plurality of this audience goes to the movie first when they say when they hear Varsity Blues?
Yes. I'll see you in the comments.
This is my point for USC. Just be normal. Hire professionals who behave like professionals.
And this was the guy who was lauded as cleaning up the country club, possibly by a co-host on this show.
Yeah, right. This is the thing. It's like, and I fair Godfrey, it's a good thing to point out that we've talked about that. USC had years and years of, all right, we'll only hire good old boy Trojans to run our athletic department. And then you hire this guy, and it turns out he's fucking worse.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing. He leaves in disgrace. He probably, I'll stop myself there. What's up, Ian McCall?
You've done this.
He probably won't be working here anymore. Or he probably won't be working in his industry anymore. But he leaves having made two of the probably most program shattering changes in USC history.
Sports shatter. I mean,
well, I don't think hiring Lincoln shatters the sport necessarily, unless you live in Oklahoma. But the
I think that shatters the sport.
Wow.
It's Oklahoma.
Okay. Wow. Your estimation of Oklahoma's impact on that. Okay. Wow. We got to Oklahoma faster than usual when we talked about USC.
Well, yeah, I mean,
the point is, then joining the Big Ten, and he leaves, you know, Alex, how's this for a segue? Except we're not going there yet. There are certain individuals in the news this week who maybe left their job having not, you know, dotted every T and crossed every I, so to speak. That's not necessarily the case with Bone, but he made these two earth-shattering changes at USC, and now he's out. So going to be really interesting. Maybe they'll just they'll just probably rehire like Lynn Swann. That's not a joke.
Yeah, big week for future and current Big Ten schools and leaders at them being shitty, acting shitty, and having some public comeuppance for that. Michigan tried to hire, and this is several days old now. This kind of came and went in the time between when we last recorded and now. Tried to hire Glenn Schembechler.
This is an elaborate prank on me, and I'm not falling for it, that Michigan hired a man named Shemmy Schembechler. This is all a bit.
In fact, didn't just try to hire, did hire him to an off-field recruiting role, then allowed him to resign. Speaking of chicken shit, instead of firing him, allowing him to resign rather than firing him when people took the unprecedented step of looking at his Twitter likes and finding all kinds of insane and racist things in there. Shemmy apologized through a PR firm later on and, you know, seems to have at least come to understand that you can't do this and take jobs with major college football programs now. But I want to point something out and why this is interesting enough to me to put in the run of show this week. This guy, Shemmy Schembechler, was already pretty clearly a piece of shit. This was in the public domain. You didn't have to go through his Twitter likes, again, which anybody can do, they're public, to figure this out. In 2021, his brother, Shemmy's brother, said that he had been one of the victims of sexual assault by Robert Anderson, a former medical professional who had worked with the football team during the Bo Schembechler era and has a long, long list of accusers. And Shemmy's brother said that he had told Bo about this abuse and that Bo didn't do anything and reacted violently when told about it. So at that point, Shemmy and other family members put out a statement that doesn't quite call the brother a liar, but walks right up to it and says, no, Bo didn't know about this. We're confident he didn't. And if he had, he would have stopped it, which sure, whatever. Like that runs completely counter to a pile of evidence and testimony from people who were there and who have no reason that anyone can tell to make anything like this up. But that's what he did in 2021. That was how Shemmy handled this. And where it really comes back to for me is Jim Harbaugh and Ward Manuel. Harbaugh has never backed off his very enthusiastic boosterism of Bo Schembechler, his old coach. He still wears the hat, still speaks reverently of him whenever he speaks of him at all, even though I think we should be talking about this guy roughly the same way that we talk about Joe Paterno. Ward Manuel is a Schembechler guy. They still work out of Schembechler Hall. To me, letting this hire get made suggests that one, Ward Manuel can't or doesn't want to do his job effectively, and B, that Harbaugh just absolutely does not care about what we now have good reason to believe happened in Schembechler's program under his watch. So if you are a sexual assault survivor at Michigan, the message has been kind of clear for a while now. Damn sorry to hear that. And now it also turns out that this guy is a racist and insane. So just well done all around by Michigan.
This is the one institution that across social media spectrums, national media, sports writing, people in the sports writing industry, people in the media in general, in real life, cocktail parties across places like Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. This is the institution that wants to let you know they went there faster than the Ivies. This is 20 years of experience talking. This is the institution.
What do you mean went there?
Like clear up, they will there. Try and find a way to let you know they went to Michigan as fast as humanly possible.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
And y'all Nepo hired a giant racist man baby named Shemmy Schembechler. And y'all still want to chase me down on social media after 10 years.
Dude.
Because of toxic SEC cultures, because players got paid cash not to go to your fucking university.
Oh, Shemmy. God.
Shemmy. His name Shemmy. Is Shemmy. How is this Shemmy. Not a bit?
The I think disappointing thing here, like it's among the disappointing things here, I should say, Ward Manuel is like really complicit here. I mean, Ward Manuel also played for Bo. Like this isn't the first thing that's popped up under Ward Manuel's watch in this university. Google Michigan hockey investigation for starters. I don't know.
Is it an Iowa-ing? Is it? It's like in terms of oversight of your department. I'm just asking. It seems
I mean, it's the same thing.
Your coach do whatever he wants, even if it's really dumb.
I'm not going to split hairs here, but I think it's arguably a little bit different because of the which tail is wagging which dog, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a little bit different. But anyway, what I. I don't know. This is one where I think that it's interesting that when we were talking about this, we were talking about this on the phone a couple of days ago, and Alex made the point of like, why isn't this regarded basically on the same level as the Joe Paterno thing? And it, I'm not trying to say one is worse than the other, one is on par with the other. I'm just trying to attack that statement in and of itself. I don't know. Is it a timing thing? Is it because the Joe Paterno thing was the first thing? Is it because Joe Paterno got fired because of it? Like, I don't.
It's to me, all of the differences don't change how we should view the head coach, because it's pretty clearly like the head coach had a responsibility and there's no indication that he met it. And so that's that.
Bo, you're talking, you mean Bo.
And Paterno. And God, I don't like to talk about Joe Paterno on this podcast because people get in their feelings and I think it's obvious what the right view is at this point. But like, I just think that this is important because when we deify college football coaches and do not adjust their legacies accordingly, when it is very clear that they have at best overseen programs where monstrous things happened and at worst sanctioned them and allowed them to go on, and we don't then take them down like 20 pegs in retirement, even in death, and remember to lead with that when we're talking about who they were, then we're not appropriately discouraging that kind of behavior in the future. Like I think that's why I think that, yeah, like we should talk about Bo Schembechler as a pariah first and as Michigan's very successful coach second, because there's just
never gonna
there's enough there. I understand that, but never. we have a podcast though. So I want to try to at least be,
yeah, no, I don't,
sliver of the change that we'd like to see in the world.
I don't fault you for trying, but there's too much of an apparatus there. And it's one of the things that Michigan excels at is whitewashing themselves.
It's just immensely disappointing to see. Like the big stuff that we're talking about here obviously happened. It's happened for years. Like it's happened. It's unfolded through inaction, really, over several years. But then it's just kind of like an extra middle finger to try to hire this guy in the first place. And then also like letting him resign instead of firing him into the sun, which would have been well within their rights. Like, that's another thing. You sure you're not just doing that because you don't want to fire a Schembechler? Like, would you have extended that same courtesy to John Smith, the Michigan recruiting coordinator who did something like this? I don't know.
I would say this. We still don't know why Michigan fired the offensive coordinator for cause 3 months ago, five months ago.
Yeah.
That guy was fired for cause.
We don't know.
A lot of details have been very sparse on that. That was Zach Weiss. And there had been some reporting about an investigation of potential computer crimes, which no need to speculate. We don't know. So we haven't seen anything.
What
about
does
that
it tell you? What does it tell you when he is dismissed with such alacrity? Whereas these individuals are not. So we don't have the fact of the matter. But again, Michigan, we can only take what you put out there, pal. And if you display a set of behaviors and then you display that particular behavior in dismissing that individual so promptly, what does that lead you to believe that individual did?
Yeah, it's a huge bummer. And
I want to talk about
so often at, I feel like the entire Big Ten is going to, my school's been there. We're going to just collect these at some point. All 14 Big Ten schools are going to just disappoint their fan base spectacularly.
Alex, I want to talk about a more prestigious university that's actually rising in accreditation and research grants.
Jesus. Here we go.
Is that perhaps the University of Georgia Athens? Do they even call it the University of Georgia Athens?
Sorry, I thought we were doing the USF bit first. I was not going to make that joke about Georgia.
Oh,
no, God, no.
Sorry, yeah, I was trying to get to USF.
Wow.
Saw that one coming from a mile away.
Steven, this is what happens when you skip the show run. Richard, give me 30 seconds. Give me 30 seconds, Richard, on Georgia getting Dylan Raiola, the number one overall player and quarterback in the 24 recruiting class.
It's extremely good. Like, it's really good. It's a step up for Georgia at this quarterback position. Obviously, they have recruited and signed very talented quarterbacks in the last few years. Justin Fields, the guys they have on the roster, highly rated prospects, whatever. It is a continuation of saying, hey, we are, I it's okay. Look, there is an offense that they ran with Stetson Bennett. It is the max capacity, highest competency offense you can run with Stetson Bennett. They just won another national championship with it. Great, great job. I have said on this podcast, I have written whatever. When we talk about is Georgia Bama, is Kirby Nick in training? Nick's greatest strength, Nick's greatest trick he pulled is the pivot midway through where he saw where the sport was going and said, all right, bet, and went there and went farther there than basically anybody else did and continued to win national championships. Now, Georgia's defense is going to not be as good as it was in the last 2 years. It could still be a top five defense, probably still will be, and not what it was the last 2 years. I don't think, I think that people may understate what's leaving, particularly in the middle of that defensive line. Not only is Jalen Carter gone, also is Bear Alexander. You're going to have to replace some things in the middle of that defense. So what do? You lean on the other side of the ball and make sure that is boosted up. That is what I think this is. That is Georgia saying we need to continue to stoke the furnace on offense. We need to continue to pivot to scoring a bunch of points. You know, when I was at Nebraska, and Nebraska was also in the running for Dylan Raiola. Dylan Raiola's uncle is Nebraska's offensive line coach, was Scott's. Matt retained him. When I was there, I asked some people around there. I was like, how are you guys feeling about Dylan? And it was not a very confident response. Not in they thought they were going to lose him. It was more of the like, we're really not sure because we don't really know kind of the makeup of the young man. Like, does he want to come here and be a legacy? Or does he want to kind of forge his own path? Also, Matt Rhule's a new coach. Just got there in December. There's no relationship there as there was. Obviously, the uncle's on staff. But there's no relationship there with the rest of the staff as there would have been with Scott Frost and the rest of the previous staff. So I don't think Nebraska's terribly surprised that he went to Georgia. I'm sure they're disappointed. As far as Georgia's concerned, like, yeah, this is it. This is another thing that you look at and you say, okay, they are continuing to put a best foot forward here. They are continuing to try to level up and kick on. Like, this is what you want to see from a team that you think, expect, or at least can have the conversation about being the preeminent power in the sport. I'm not just talking about the last 2 years. I'm talking about in some level of perpetuity here. Side note to that, stop speeding, Georgia football players. Stop speeding. There was another one that got popped for speeding. It came out, I believe, yesterday in The Athletic. Stop speeding.
Good note. Good advice.
Sure, the university will be forthcoming about that.
Yeah, we'll be intriguing to see what happens now that Georgia is recruiting a little bit. Stephen, do you want to redo your Tampa joke now that we're going to talk for a minute about USF?
No, we butchered it. It's fine now. I'm not even mad about it.
Okay, I can tell you're not even mad about it.
God, USF is going to try and get an on-campus stadium built, and professors are mad.
Grow up.
I can actually see. Well, actually, Richard.
No.
Richard, don't take. Nope. This is mine to shoot down. I claimed it. This is mine. Alex, set it up. All right, let's keep.
So USF's been talking about building an on-campus stadium for how long? What year did Christ die?
40 years.
Yeah, so for 2023 years, USF.
Did you say what year did Christ die?
And it was 2023 years ago, Stephen.
Ask your people.
He's not really supposed to know that. Ask your people. That's not something he knows off the top of his head.
Stephen, please.
That one's not okay.
They have
historically accurate.
They have been working on this for a long time, and it seems like it's actually going to happen now. They got a committee approval on Tuesday. Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times was reporting on this. And I think that they are actually going to get the stadium built. if they want to be serious in football, they have to do this. They can't keep playing it, Ray J. So I get it. Although I think the faculty who raised some concerns about the money here are not entirely wrong. When you look at the numbers, they're going to take on $200 million in debt as part of this project. It's going to cost $340 million in total. And I guess they've got the other $140 accounted for. You know, USF football making good on $200 million of debt as a kind of investment. You know, I could see how an academic could have some questions about that.
So
I don't think they're being ridiculous.
Okay. They're not off base entirely, but it's not for the reasons that faculty are normally going to grouse about football taking precedent. I did a minor amount of research here about the shout out to Matt Baker, because he did all the actual reporting here. So shout him out, TampaBay.com. He covers the Bulls, covers college football in the greater, in Alex's favorite city in America. What do these schools want to be? I'm just asking. I'm not trying to discount the involvement of academics in the actual pursuit of higher education. I know this is a football podcast, but what do these schools want to be? I'm asking up front because I know it's expensive to build an FBS program, a football state. Well, no, just to build a program, actually. I'll stay with my line flub there. It can also be very lucrative. Is that what you want? Because the behavior of USF has displayed that that's what they want. Ultimately, they've just been sort of pocked with inertia and poor decision making, and I think a lack of consistency in some leadership positions over the years. What would it look like culturally to not have an on-campus stadium after all this time, 20 years from now? I think it would be fairly devastating. USF is growing in undergraduate enrollment. It was like around a 9% increase in the last freshman class that went through in 22. They are growing in accreditation, ironically. And Alex, just take a deep breath and try not to say anything. Despite what's going on in Florida politics.
What's going on in Florida politics?
With higher education, most of the large public universities in Florida are actually ranking better through various means and metrics than they ever have before. Okay. USF is included in that. So I'm trying to hold two thoughts, which is always the most dangerous thing to do in the social media era. Yes, you want to invest in research institutions, in libraries and facilities and buildings. A quick aside, have y'all ever been to USF? It is a lot of parking lots. This may be one of the easier like problems America. To solve from a logistics standpoint than I've ever seen. Like they got the room, I promise you. I promise you. So, but like, they're not.
The reality of the situation, Godfrey, is like USF got left behind.
Yes. And they USF- want to catch back up. Now, here's the interesting thing about the economics that Matt touched on in his article that I found. This is actually the most interesting part. Not that professors are mad that football takes precedence. Not that it's not a talking point, but we kind of know that. They're taking on significant debt. The project's going to cost even more. And what they're projecting is that the future revenue from concessions, from parking, from ticket sales, from PSLs, from suites, all of these things that they don't get at Raymond James, they don't make any money. We need to say that up front. Playing in the Buccaneer Stadium. Not only is it disconnected, it's not even close to campus. Like, I've been there for USF game day. It sucks. Like, I get it. We can talk about Miami in a second, but they don't make any money. What I found interesting was, even with all the things that they're projecting that this stadium will yield in terms of revenue, they're saying it still won't offset. In fact, they'll be behind what they need to pay off, and they have to dip into fundraising to do it. I think that's where the professors are mad. It's interesting to me, Alex, because I kind of thought, based on my jaded worldview of college sports, that they would have just flubbed that projection and made it look a little bit more even than it is. But I kind of appreciate that they're coming out and saying, like, this is a risk. This is an actual risk to invest in this. I respect that. Also, I would throw this back out at y'all. You've asked for it forever. This puts real pressure on the athletic department and the football program specifically to acquit themselves better. Like, you can't have the patience that you showed Jeff Scott. You cannot do it. You guys have got to start building something, because you have to start selling things. I made it this entire bit without talking about UCF, because they are, I think we all agree now, so far down the road past them that they're out of the line of vision for USF. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
like, they're in the Big 12.
You have to generate a fraction of the excitement that they did when the Bounce House opened in, like, I remember it was a Mac Brown Texas team that christened it. So that's how old it is. Like,
they almost beat them.
Yeah.
If I recall.
This was back when, like, yeah, the all aluminum stadium that was really loud. You kind of have to do this, or you're not going to be that kind of public university, is what I'm getting at. And by the way, this only leaves Miami. Miami's the only one now without an on-campus stadium. International and Atlantic could both have on-campus stadiums, if you didn't know.
I'm not saying don't build it. They needed to build it. I agree with Alex that they needed to build it. Who you filling this thing against? Like, who's coming to?
I don't have the capacity offhand, but it's going to be much smaller than Ray J. So
it needs to be.
Yeah. I did a good War on I-4 game. Both teams winning records, like both teams relevant in Ray J. And it was like the deck. I don't even know if they opened the deck. Like you need, like just make a tight 35, and that with the opportunity to build, like.
Yeah, I think I've said this on this podcast. Everybody building a stadium should just build TCU Stadium.
Small is good. Like for all but what 10, maybe 12, 15 college football programs, probably should be in a smaller building than you're in.
It makes for a look when
you are either covering seats or when there are tons of exposed bleachers at a college football game. No, it doesn't ruin the experience, but it definitely takes some juice out of the event when you're looking around and you're reminded that you're not fulfilling what you had hoped you would in terms of excitement.
How many tarps do you see at facilities in which the university actually wants to be there and controls? Usually when you're seeing that, it's because they're stuck in a place like Raymond James or something like that.
My alma mater, it's just rows and rows and rows and rows and sections and sections and sections of
empty
80% empty bleachers. And
that campus?
Doesn't look good. Yeah. Maryland. Absolutely.
What are y'all doing?
It doesn't look good, but remember this, remember this.
I didn't know that.
I don't know the proportion of premium seating that this stadium is going to have, but premium seating is what makes the money here. It's why. Yeah. It's not a great look. Yeah, it's not a great atmosphere, especially in college sports when you don't have a full stadium. But it's the premium seat. I'm going to butcher the ratio because I forgot it. But it's like 4% of the tickets sold at these stadiums make like way over 50% of the revenue.
At a certain point, you're selling tickets to the rank and file and the bad seats. So they'll boost your concession sales. You're breaking even or actually taking a little bit of a haircut on the $15 tickets at the Kroger counter in your local Tampa Kroger, whatever it is, like that's done to raise concessions or honestly, you get it back in parking too. Like it just depends. We all made fun of Missouri, not y'all, but like a long time ago when Missouri and A&M came into the SEC because A&M started bulking up and renovating Kyle and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And this, I'm talking about like 2012, Missouri took that new SEC money and said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to renovate, make it tighter, make it nicer. We're going to make it nicer. Yeah. The focus went on making it nicer. And I believe it actually lowered the overall capacity. At the time, we were like, ha ha, look at these Yankees. And that is by far the model by which everyone, literally everyone, should follow from here on out.
The USF Bulls taking a step into the future and trying to make themselves a more marketable college football program. One thing that they've already done to that effect is partnered up with our partners at Homefield Apparel. You can get a USF collection and dozens of other school collections at homefieldapparel.com. If you use the promo code SZD20, that's SZD20, you get 20% off your first order. You can also download Homefield's app and get great deals every day on particular shirts that they put on sale. Very much worth your time and very much worth getting for yourself or a gift for somebody else.
Richard, we got New Florida.
Yeah, Richard. That's right. Richard, you'll have Homefield stuff that you'll actually wear again because you only wear Florida stuff.
Florida.
There is a golfing Florida shirt that I am just over the moon about.
This week is Florida, LSU, and Miami refreshes, which I believe it just means they add on. I don't think they take anything away. And then the debut of UNC Wilmington. I neglected to mention last week that the debut last week was Jackson State, which had some really nice stuff.
We have some fun stuff cooking to collaborate with our home field friends as well at Split Zone Duo Live. That will be June 15th in Washington, D.C. We are thrilled that you are coming. If you are coming, we want you to come. If you have not gotten a ticket yet, it's going to be at a great venue called Penn Social, very close to the National Mall and all that official Washington stuff, but fun in the slightly less government-y part of downtown DC. where there's a lot of bars and fun stuff to do. We will be hanging out all night. We will have a recording. We will have a Q&A afterward, and we just can't wait to meet you. Tickets are at splitzoneduolive.com. That's splitzoneduolive.com. And it's going to be a wonderful event for our very first live recording as a podcast. Also, next week, Split Zone Duo Patreon, patreon.com/SCD. Godfrey, big stuff coming.
Dead Letters. You setting me up to hype your show. I love it. Dead Letters is back. Dead Letters is back, baby. I will have another single wing, by the way, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Pac-12 on that. If you guys haven't noticed, the Pac-12 continues to die in probably the just slowest, most horrible fashion possible. But Alex, your baby's back. Season 2.
Yes. Richard and I have sent off the first episode to genius Anthony Vito post-production. We will announce the school. I don't know if we're not great promoters, really. I don't know if it will be the first.
Speak for yourself.
If we will announce what the school is, but it is a Floridian school, we can say.
It is a Floridian school. Also, we will have something on. We will be out for Memorial Day on this here show next week, but we will have something, especially for those of you who are not familiar with Dead Letters.
Looking forward to that, and hope that you have a quality time with people that you love over the Memorial Day week as well. So we'll have stuff rolling out for you that week. All right, fellas, close out the show. Big segment here. It's titled Big 10, more like Big Mad. The big story this week by Pete Thamel at ESPN.
God, you were so proud of that one. I'm sorry.
Outlines a bunch of ongoing discord in the Big Ten Conference because being rich does not always make you happy, even though it usually does. The Big Ten finished up a media deal last year, but didn't exactly dot all of the I's and cross all of the T's. And then Kevin Warren, the commissioner, bounced out to the Chicago Bears. So now there's a new commissioner, Tony Petitti, who has a little more on his plate in these first months than was first widely realized. Big things here. Number one, the contracts aren't done. So the full contracts are not done. And the Big Ten has sort of been operating off of broader deal points, like a memorandum of understanding, if you will, with Fox, with NBC, with CBS that are going to be its partners on this deal. That's not uncommon, right, Richard, in college sports for big deals to sort of be announced.
It's kind of the, yeah.
They get announced and then they come back and they do all of the extra legalese after the deal is announced.
Yeah, that's kind of the way this goes. Everybody wants their fancy press release. Everybody wants their announcement.
It's better than money. It's IOUs.
Off of the top, before any other conversation, the deal is not going to fall apart.
No.
The deal is not going to fall apart. The deal is not going to fall apart.
No. And okay. They will deal with that.
Just so we know that.
No, but it's going to be funny. And that's what we're here for.
Yes, of course. Of course.
I'm here to get them lulls, baby. This is,
yeah, I mean, this is process stuff. This is inside the actor's studio. You know, it's pretty apparent here that Kevin Warren and Kevin Warren's, you know, legal team or the Big Ten's legal team at the time missed some stuff. I don't know if it's a legal shortcut situation. I don't know the way to term it.
Yeah.
But obviously they missed some stuff.
Let's walk out what that was.
And then Warren got a new job and Tony Petitti gets in the job and realizes, hey, we got to figure it out. Got to figure some stuff out. As Alex is about to say, it's new media partners. It's a very long deal. The what is not done is the long form of the deal.
So Fox is going to need back apparently something like $40 million, which is a drop in the bucket, but, you know, a big drop in the bucket because Kevin Warren gave NBC the 2026 title game without full clearance to do so or without fully walking out those discussions.
Alex, real quick to stop you there because it is very important here that we state this. The Big Ten doesn't own all of its games. And you know this, but you may not realize you know this. So Fox owns 60% of the Big Ten network. That's why Fox also was like, Fox got to consult. Fox got to consult the Big Ten and the Big Ten network in negotiations with ostensibly its competitors, NBC and CBS and ESPN to an extent, when this negotiation was happening last summer. It's a weird, kind of convoluted situation, but that's the rub here. with trying to sell the, for instance, conference championship game.
Big Ten's going to have to give another 25 mil back to Fox because of the COVID season in 2020 and games that weren't played, ads that weren't sold against those games. So that's like 65 million bucks right there that, you know, obviously spread around the conference and over some years. It's not enormous, even though but it is enormous, 65 million bucks, and it will affect budget somewhat for at least a little while. And also there is a problem with the NBC weekly Saturday primetime spot, because all of the Big Ten's biggest brands, like the ones you think of, have not regularly had to, or even not at all had to recently, play night games in November when it's really cold and everyone is tired. And I'm just going to get out of the way. You guys go ahead.
I thought y'all liked the cold. This is the entire identity of this conference. This is the entire message point of this conference. Y'all's entire identity is about being real Americans and hard-nosed in Midwestern weather. And y'all shit is unacceptable after 6 p.m.? Oh, golly. Better get to the Meijer before it closes and turn the furnace on. Y'all need to shut up about this now. I didn't even know that this is the sticking point from the ESPN report. By the way, I'm going to make it through this whole segment and not laugh my ass off about ESPN going anally up the other conference and other networks TV deal without any disclosure. This is the fucking circus we live in. Anyway, Ohio State will host Michigan State on November 11th. November 11th. The latest ever home night game in Ohio State history, which is viewed as another concession to help the league through this movement. Y'all need to shut the fuck up about your weather. November 11th at night? The Mac will play in an abandoned shopping mall in January with no fucking roof on. They'll play in the Silver Dome now, which is rubble, if you tell them to.
Y'all can't play at
6 o'clock?
I do love the idea of Ohio State,
8 o'clock, doing, go ahead.
Ohio State doing the league a solid. The night game thing to me, it's really, really ridiculous here. Okay. So for some backstory, I'm not kidding about this. Michigan Stadium got lights like 10 years ago.
And there's like one road in and one road out because it's lined with books about war.
Northwestern still doesn't have permanent lights. Purdue got them like 5 or 6. Like this night game thing and day game, like it is very much a thing in that part of the world. I will give you one thing, Godfrey, as someone who has been there knows, maybe we don't play night games at Penn State at the end of November. Maybe we don't do that. But the rest of them, you guys got to figure something out. Because getting to Happy Valley at midnight in the snow and the ice does not sound super thrilling to me, a Floridian. But the rest of you guys got to grow up here. Because one of the greatest spectacles in the sport would be Ohio State and Michigan Thanksgiving or the Saturday after Thanksgiving night at 8 o'clock. That would be absolutely sick. Now, you know, for whatever reason, for all these reasons, they're not going to do it.
Richard,
and this is another thing.
Wasn't there an actual complaint in the media regionally in the Midwest about postseason games and potential home playoff games? And we need the advantage to be able to host these games. You motherfuckers won't go outside after 5 o'clock past Halloween.
Well, remember, Godfrey, it was like all the fans were like, oh, we're going to get, you know, Georgia and Texas in for first round playoff game. But hold on. But you guys remember how all the fans were like, we're going to get these teams to come in the cold in the first round of the playoff. We need them on campus. And Ohio State was like,
Can we play at
Lucas Oil?
We run a spread now. We throw the ball 45 times a game. Actually, let's keep it on the carpet, please.
By the way, I want to point out real fast. Like if you're listening to this and you're a Youper or you're from Duluth, Minnesota, I love y'all because y'all have more in common with the Deep South than you do with like these metropolitan than Michigan and Ohio State. Don't beat your chest about this Midwest weather bullshit like you do all the time. And by the way, before someone gets me at the comments about like heat advisories, well, look, you know, you're not allowed to kick off in Arizona until a certain time.
What about those, Steven?
Because it's 110 degrees and you don't die.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know where they don't do that? the SEC, baby, because in Gainesville, yeah, and brother. Oxford and Starkville, when your ass, when your ass is as soaking wet as a gang shower at 11 in the morning, their toe meets fucking leather. Oregon had to literally have hydration vests that cooled the body to play in Mississippi State in 2001. Look that shit up.
Okay.
It's the, 6 o'clock. Everyone burrow down before the snow zombies come.
The other part of this and that we haven't gotten to is the coaches being like, we should have been consulted.
Oh, let me back. Let me back. To,
please.
Let me back.
By all means.
Right. Here's the one. I have a thing for this, Alex, but I also want you to go off.
Okay. The one that I am most bothered by, and maybe this is because I just think this guy's a bit of a curmudgeon in general, and he's not my guy. Maybe he's yours. But Tom Izzo, man, cry me the world's freest flowing river about this. Michigan State's basketball coach is on the record in this story being quite disappointed about the number of Peacock games that his team is going to play.
I told you guys about this, by the way.
Yes.
I told you.
I know why he's doing
this. Big Ten coaches.
I get it.
I told y'all the Big Ten coaches were not thrilled about the streaming element of this deal.
And that's, I understand it.
Two points on this. Number one, why do you think you would be consulted on this? Like, does the president of Michigan State draw up the pick and roll for you, Tom? No, they do not. They've never done that. I don't think you would respond well if they did that. And number two,
weirdly, I can counter
college
that.
Basketball is popular roughly 1 month a year now. It is on the edge of being like in tier one or even tier two of American sports at this point. And yet, Tom Izzo
doesn't really mean that shop at home field. He doesn't. We love Indiana.
You make $6 million a year to coach the sport. Where do you think that money comes from?
Okay, so here's why he's mad.
Like, take the check. Richard's take the check energy.
Okay.
Take the check and smile energy about coaches complaining about this. The reason coach salaries have exploded is because of these media deals.
Yes.
So give back 60% of your salary or pipe down.
So he's mad because in his mindset, the terms of his agreement have changed. He's mad because he doesn't have any agency over the exposure of the games he's coaching in. While I don't necessarily think it's a one-to-one comparison, this sounds shockingly a lot like the complaints that I was getting, not from million-dollar salaried head coaches in the Pac-12 a long time ago, but from their assistants and recruiting coordinators and the people in the offices who are trying to reach out to 4- and 5-star athletes in Dallas and Atlanta to come play at places like Oregon and Washington, et cetera, et cetera. This sucks. It sucks. But a game on Peacock is not going to be as readily available in recruiting for exposure and for marketing the brand as it would. Because remember, like Richard, you talked about this before. Fox and the Big Ten, they're all about like keeping that coax, baby. Like they shot Fox. There's a million industry think pieces have been written about this in the last 2 months. Fox is not leaning into streaming. Fox is all about that set-top box, that cable box, about keeping you locked in with Charter or Comcast or whomever, okay? So this kind of flies in the face of that, and I get it from a certain standpoint. I guess it's just because I've heard a lot from coaches over the years, spent a lot of time with them. I agree, Alex. It's not a deal breaker. Also, how many games are we really talking about here that are going to affect Izzo?
Like maybe 2 or 3 per team at most, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not going to be, it's a couple dozen, I believe, games a year, basketball. And I think it's 8 Big Ten football games a year. So
I'm sympathetic, by the way, obviously I don't care about college basketball, shop at home field. But I would say that I just feel bad. I mean, they're in Indiana. They don't even have football in that state.
It's a bad product. So,
the football is not the t-shirts. They're lovely.
No, the basketball.
Okay, we're so off track.
Indiana basketball is making a comeback.
I want to point out, they actually are. Mike Woodson.
Yeah, well, they're pretty good. Awesome,
man.
Both Indiana basketball programs are pretty serious right now.
All right, this is the dumbest aside we've had for a while. Okay, here's what I'm trying to say. Coaches don't want this shit. I just find it ironical. Now, do they want a ton of money and agency and control and like to be able to be a little despot over their little kingdom and rule like, tyrannically? Yes. But they want ESPN or Fox, like Fox, Big Fox, to show their game to as big an audience as possible. That's how coaches think. They don't want to be like, oh, we're on the Pluto. We're on an app called Go90, as if a thing would ever exist. Like, you got to do this and download this, and then you got to sign up here. Like, no, they don't want that. They just want raw exposure.
I can't believe I'm out here defending Peacock, because of the big streamers, it's probably the one that I find the interface to be the least pleasant. And also,
do you
I
have it?
Well, you better.
Do you have
you
it?
Better get used
I know,
to it.
Bubba. I
have
it now. We all got to get it.
I have it now. But exactly. It's also just like Peacock is not like obscure. You know, like it's pretty popular. You know, NBC Universal, somewhat large company.
Well, the entire WWE has gone behind is now Peacock. The stuff that doesn't air on Fox.
Really? You Michigan State basketball are not above this, is my point. And I am very anti the current moment in streaming. I wrote about this extensively last year and something I did for The Atlantic, that right now we are in purgatory where we are not yet into the streaming future, but we are being asked to pay for a couple of things to watch the same thing. Like, obviously we're fine with subscriptions. You know, please subscribe to our Patreon. It's not that I won't pay for content.
We're cheaper than Peacock.
It's that right now we are cheaper than Peacock. That's very true. Right now you still have to pay for regular television.
It's so
and you,
much.
And you they, also they, have to pay for streaming. And that's ultimately, it's just going to be, it's just inconvenient, really. Yes. It's not even a humongous added expense. It's a bit of an added expense. Eventually, it's just going to be a really expensive DTC deal.
This isn't just college sports. We know that. I want to point out, I hold the belief that unless you want to consume all of the world soccer, that if you live in America, college football is the one that's going to cost you the most money. I think it's going to continue to cost you more and more money to consume all of the FBS, just the FBS.
If you Sunday ticket aside.
No, I think it's going to outstrip that in the future, because you're still going to have a regular cable subscription, and then you're going to stack. I'm telling you, because like I'm already signed up for Sunday Ticket, and it's a couple $100 for like.
But Steven, remember, Sunday Ticket is not the only thing you have to buy to watch the NFL. The NFL is still going to be more expensive than college football because the rights fees are so big. So like you'll still have to have regular networks, which you could do with an antenna in theory, but you'll have to have
Prime. Well, I guess here's the deal. It's a different consumption model because my game's always going to be out of market. So, but my, sharing this in our group text. It was about the Yankees, but I experienced this last weekend with the Braves. It's not just the Yankees because they're the biggest name in baseball. The Yankees had five games in a row on five different platforms where you essentially had to have five different subscriptions to view five consecutive Yankee games. The Braves did this to me last weekend. Apple on one night, which we happen to have right now, I think for like some show my wife is watching. Regular Fox. I don't have a cable television subscription right now because it's the dead of summer, so I had to like pirate that. Then it was like, I want to say ESPN Sunday night, and then the next night was Bally Sports Southeast for the Braves just to watch four Braves games. Like, it's annoying for everybody. I get it. It sucks. Like, we've said on the show before, like, just tell me what to pay for and I'll pay it. And I guess the chickens are coming home to roost on that because Richard, like, you're signed up for, well, you had Sunday Ticket, right? For the Jags before.
Yeah, I had Sunday Ticket for the Jags. And then I also have, obviously I have Peacock because I watch a bunch of soccer.
Okay.
And it is even annoying, it's annoying because you'll wake up in the morning and you're like, wait, is it on USA or is it on, is it on Big
NBC? So do you have cable right now?
Or is it on Peacock? I have YouTube TV.
Okay. So that my thing was, well, I don't need YouTube. I signed up, but I don't need the YouTube TV thing until actual toe meets leather. And then I DVR the games for SCD and we talk about the college stuff. And then now it's like super easy. I said, look, I'll pay $400 to watch my team. And I'm doing that for my favorite sports team. In college football, if you want to consume the whole hog, which is like the conceit of our little business that we run here, it is going to cripple you financially moving forward. And there's never going to be one source. I get it, Alex. Like, Alex trying to get us out of here, but like, you're always going to have ESPN something. Versus Fox. Fox, like Richard just told you that Fox literally sat in on negotiations with other networks because that's how far up the ass they are of the sport and the control that they exert, which is why you need to distrust some of the media perspectives here. But we have to have something that's better for the consumer, or the consumer's going to check out.
Steven, one thing that is indisputably great, however, for college football as a result
of
the Big Ten's new media deal.
Here it is.
Is that the Big Ten is sending gladiators into the arena on Black Friday.
Yeah, baby.
To defend our terrain from the encroaching Miami Dolphins and New York Jets,
y'all,
who are trying to take yet another day of the
y'all
calendar. And the Big Ten is going to send James Franklin and Mel Tucker
He's
out there
real happy
as,
about this.
as well as Iowa and Nebraska. And they're going to send these guys out there with their teams and say, it's on you.
All right. When Alex talks about the upcoming Penn State season, it's gaslighting. And I believe that. All right. I know what he's doing. It's a PSYOPs campaign.
We are laying fiber, but, baby.
No, that's good. Penn State's going to be trying to, wrap an 11-1 season.
Yes. This isn't a joke. Y'all keep doing the thing, but I just want to let everyone know. Think about the Penn State that finally beats Ohio State and Michigan. Let's just say that's the hypothetical.
And
they're in the playoff contention, and they're going into a short week having to go to East Lansing, where it might be cold outside, allegedly. And now they have to do it on Black Friday. I'm happy that college football is doing this, because this is the – I'm going to read them off really fast. Not the entire thing, but of that day and what we know about Penn State going into 2023, the next best games are probably going to be what? Texas Tech at Texas or TCU at Oklahoma? Oregon State, Oregon, as much as I love the Beavs and I love that, like, probably won't have a lot of national impact. And then you have Iowa, Nebraska. But together, what I just laid out, by the way, there's a couple MAC games and Miami is playing at BC, which I don't know. That's the day. So it's also, now that I've named them all, it's also Ohio, Akron, Toledo, Central Michigan. That's enough right there to tell the 2 p.m. Jets Dolphins game to fuck right off.
All right. Okay. If the Jets are 10-6 and the Dolphins are competing for the division.
Let me tell you how pissed off.
If Aaron Rodgers is 10-6.
I didn't want to hear his name. Here's why. The only ESPN I consume is when I see it on mute in the gym. So that's 4 days a week at least. The amount of times I have looked up and seen a fabricated nothing burger of a segment about Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, and it's fucking May. Do you know how terrible that's going to be to endure that this year?
I hate media outlets that try to talk about football topics in May and make them interesting for their audience.
Why are you defending this shit? We talked about USF for 20 minutes.
Look, I just think that college football is ready to fight. Also, Steven, this is big because that national exposure for Michigan State could do a lot. It could do a lot for the NFL Aaron Rodgers.
I'm not going to let you talk over it. Alex, huge Aaron Rodgers fan. Big fan of his perspective. He's a counterculture thinker.
Steven doesn't want you to hear about the NF Tuck market and the boom that could come when Michigan State gets a Black Friday audience.
Because, I don't know,
maybe he's short NF Tuck. I have no idea. Steven, Richard, thank you, as always.
Shimmy Shimbeckler. It's not a real human.